Hello.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for listening so much. I'm recording this because today I hit 20,000 plays on my Anchor account, which is incredible. It's particularly incredible because I checked it yesterday and it had 19,800. So I don't know how on earth you guys have listened to 200 things across between all of you and across all of my podfics. But thank you. I'm honored. I love to have you around. And I wanted to do something nice to celebrate this occasion. And according to my Twitter followers, the best thing I can do for you is read some canon good omens, which, according to Neil Gaiman on Twitter, is okay to do during lockdown and all that, and so long as we're not making any money with it, which I'm not doing with my podfix, so I'm relying on Neil here that this is not going to get taken down. So, here goes. Here's some favorite scenes from both the show and the book, so the script book and the book, and I hope you enjoy. Good Omens, the book. 11 years ago. Harriet Dowling returned home with her baby, which, on the advice of Sister Faith Prolix, who was more persuasive than Sister Mary, and with a telephone agreement of her husband, she had named Warlock. The cultural attaché returned home a week later and pronounced the baby the spit of his side of the family. He also had his secretary advertise in The Lady for a nanny. Crowley had seen Mary Poppins on television one Christmas. Indeed, behind the scenes, Crowley had had a hand in most television, although it was on the invention of the game show that he truly prided himself. He toyed with the idea of a hurricane as an effective and incredibly stylish way of disposing of the queue of nannies that would certainly form, or possible stack up in a holding pattern, outside the cultural attaché's Regent's Park residence. He contented himself with a wildcat tube strike, and when the day came, only one nanny turned up. She wore a knit tweed suit and discreet pearl earrings. Something about her might have said nanny, but it said it in an undertone of the sort employed by British butlers in a certain type of American film. It also coughed discreetly and muttered that she could well be the sort of nanny who advertises unspecified but strangely explicit services in certain magazines. Her flat shoes crunched up the gravel drive, and a grey dog padded silently by her side, white flecks of saliva dripping from its jaw. Its eyes glinted scarlet, and it glanced from side to side, hungrily. She reached the heavy wooden door, smiled to herself, a brief, satisfied flicker, and rang the bell. It donged gloomily. The door was opened by a butler, as they say, of the old school. A night school just off the Tottenham Court Road, run by an elderly actor who had played butlers and gentlemen's gentlemen in films and television and on the stage since the 1920s. "I am Nanny Ashtoreth," she told him, "and this..." She continued while the grey dog at her side eyed the butler carefully, working out, perhaps, where it would bury the bones, "is Rover." She left the dog in the garden and passed her interview with flying colours, and Mrs. Dowling led the nanny to see her new charge. She smiled unpleasantly. "What a delightful child," she said. "He'll be wanting a little tricycle soon." By one of those coincidences, another new member of staff arrived the same afternoon. He was the gardener, and as it turned out, he was amazingly good at his job. No one quite worked out why this should be the case, since he never seemed to pick up a shovel and made no effort to rid the garden of the sudden flocks of birds that filled it and settled all over him at every opportunity. He just sat in the shade while around him the residence gardens bloomed and bloomed. Warlock used to come down to see him when he was old enough to toddle, and Nanny was doing whatever it was she did on her afternoons off. "This here's Brother Slug," the gardener would tell him, "and this tiny little critter is Sister Potato Weevil. Remember, Warlock, as you walk your way through the highways and byways of life's rich and fulsome path, to have love and reverence for all living things." "Nanny says that living things is fit only to be ground under my heels, Mr. Francis," said little Warlock, stroking Brother Slug and then wiping his hand conscientiously on his Kermit the Frog overall. "You don't listen to that woman," Francis would say. "You listen to me." At night, Nanny Ashtoreth sang nursery rhymes to Warlock.
"Oh, the grand old Duke of York, he had 10,000 men. He marched them up to the top of the hill and crushed all the nations of the world and brought them under the rule of Satan, our master. This little piggy went to Hades. This little piggy stayed home. This little piggy ate raw, steaming human flesh. This little piggy violated virgins. And this little piggy clambered over a heap of dead bodies to get to the top."
"Father Francis, the gardener, says that I must selflessly practice virtue and love all living things," said Warlock.
"You don't listen to that man, darling,"
the nanny would whisper as she tucked him into his little bed.
"You listen to me."
And so it went. The arrangement worked perfectly. A no-score win. Nanny Ashtoreth bought the child a little tricycle, but could never persuade him to ride it inside the house. And he was scared of Rover. In the background, Crowley and Aziraphale met on the tops of buses and in art galleries and at concerts, compared notes, and smiled. Good Omens, the script book, episode 1, In the Beginning. That night, Arthur and Deirdre Young proudly took the baby they believed was theirs home to the quiet English village of Tatfield. The Antichrist had been on Earth for 24 hours. While in London, Soho, an angel and a demon had been drinking solidly for the last 6 of them.
"So what exactly is your point?"
My point is, the point I'm trying to make is the dolphins. That's my point."
"Kind of fish?"
No, it's a mammal. Your actual mammal, dear Francis."
"Made out of water?"
"Don't think so. Something about their young, not the point. The point is their brains."
"What about their brains?"
"Big brains. That's my point. Size of damn big brains. Not to mention Wales. Brain City, Wales. Take it from me."
"Kraken. Great big bugger. Supposed to rise to the surface right at the end. when the sea boils.
That's my point. Whole sea bubbling, dolphins, whales, everybody turning into booyah fish soup. Not their fault. Same with gorillas. Whoops, they say, sky gone all red, stars crashing to the ground. What they putting in bananas these days?
All creatures, great and small, poor little big.
And you know what makes it worse? When it's all over, you are going to have to deal with eternity.
Eternity?
It won't be so bad at first. No more Stephen Sondheim first nights in eternity, I'm afraid. But I've heard rumours that your boss really loves the sound of music. Fancy spending eternity watching that? You could literally climb every mountain over and over and over and over and over.
I don't like it any more than you, but I told you. I can't not do what I'm told. An angel, I can't cope with this while I'm drunk. I'm going to sober up.
Me too.
Look, it's not that I disagree with you, but I'm an angel. I'm not allowed to disobey.
You think I am? My people are only into disobedience in general terms, not when it applies to them.
Even if I wanted to help, I couldn't. I can't interfere with the divine plan.
What about diabolical plans? My lot have put the baby in play, after all. You can interfere with that.
But it's still part of the overall divine plan.
Then you can't be certain that thwarting me isn't part of the divine plan too. I mean, you're supposed to thwart the wiles of the evil one at every turn, aren't you?
Well,
you see a while, you thwart. Am I right?
Broadly. Actually, I encouraged humans to do the actual...
The Antichrist has been born. But it's the upbringing that's important. Influences. And the evil influences, that's all going to be me. It would be too bad if someone made sure that I failed.
If you put it that way, heaven couldn't actually object to me thwarting you.
It'd be a real feather in your wing. We could be godfathers, sort of, overseeing his upbringing. If we do it right, he won't be evil. Or good. He'll be normal.
It might work. Godfathers. Well, I'll be damned.
It's not that bad, once you get used to it.
Good Omens, the book. Saturday. Madame Tracy broke the silence. "Weren't they odd?" she said. She didn't mean, "weren't they odd?" What she did mean, she probably could never hope to express except by screaming. But the human brain has amazing recuperative powers, and saying, "weren't they odd?" was part of the rapid healing process. Within half an hour, she'd be thinking she'd just had too much to drink.
"Is it over, do you think?" said Aziraphale.
Crowley shrugged.
"Not for us, I'm afraid."
"I don't think you need to go worrying," said Adam gnomically.
"I know all about you two. Don't you worry." He looked at the rest of the them, who tried not to back away. He seemed to think for a while, and then he said,
"There's been too much messing around anyway. But it seems to me everyone's going to be a lot happier if they forget about this. Not actually forget, just not remember exactly.
and then we can go home.
But you can't just leave it at that, said Anathema, pushing forward. Think of all the things you could do. Good things.
Like what? Said Adam suspiciously.
Well, you could bring all the whales back to start with.
He put his head on one side. And that'd stop people killing them? She hesitated. It would have been nice to say yes. And if people do start killing them, what would you ask me to do about them? Said Adam. No, I reckon I'm getting the hang of this now. Once I start messing around like that, there'd be no stopping it. Seems to me the only sensible thing is for people to know if they kill a whale, they've got a dead whale.
That shows a very responsible attitude, said Newt.
Adam raised an eyebrow. It's just sense, he said. Aziraphale patted Crowley on the back.
We seem to have survived, he said. Just imagine how terrible it might have been if we'd been at all competent.
Said Crowley.
Is your car operational?
I think it might need a bit of work,
Crowley admitted.
I was thinking that we might take these good people into town, said Aziraphale. I owe Madame Tracy a meal, I'm sure, and her young man, of course.
Shadwell looked over his shoulder, and then up at Madame Tracy.
Who's he talking about?
He asked her triumphant expression. Adam rejoined the them. I reckon we'll just be getting home, he said.
But what actually happened? Said Pepper. I mean, there was all this...
It doesn't matter anymore, said Adam.
But you could help so much,
Anathema began, as they wandered back to their bikes. Newt took her gently by the arm. That's not a good idea, he said. Tomorrow is the first day of the rest of our lives.
Do you know, she said, of all the trite things I've ever hated, that comes top. Amazing, isn't it? Said Newt happily. Why have you got Dick Turpin painted on the door of your car?
It's a joke, really, said Newt.
Hmm?
Because everywhere I go, I hold up traffic, he mumbled wretchedly. Crowley looked glumly at the controls of the jeep.
I'm sorry about the car, Aziraphale was saying. I know how much you liked it. Perhaps if you concentrated really hard...
It wouldn't be the same, said Crowley.
I suppose not.
I had it from new, you know. It wasn't a car. It was more a sort of whole body glove.
He sniffed.
What's burning?
He said. A breeze swept up the dust and dropped it again. The air became hot and heavy, imprisoning those within it like flies in syrup. He turned his head and looked into Aziraphale's horrified expression.
But it's over,
he said.
It can't happen now. The thing, the correct moment or whatever, it's gone past, it's over.
The ground began to shake. The noise was like a subway train, but not one passing under. It was more like the sound of one coming up. Crowley fumbled madly with the gear shift.
That's not Beelzebub,
he shouted above the noise of the wind.
That's him, his father. This isn't Armageddon, this is personal. Start, you bloody thing.
The ground moved under Anathema and Newt, flinging them onto the dancing concrete. Yellow smoke gushed from between the cracks.
It feels like a volcano, shouted Newt. What is it?
Whatever it is, it's pretty angry, said Anathema.
In the jeep, Crowley was cursing. Aziraphale laid a hand on his shoulder.
There are humans here, he said.
Yes, said Crowley, and me.
I mean, we shouldn't let this happen to them.
Well, what?
Crowley began and stopped.
I mean, when you think about it, we've got them into enough trouble as it is, you and me, over the years, what with one thing and another.
We were only doing our jobs,
muttered Crowley.
Yes, so what? Lots of people in history have only done their jobs, and look at the trouble they caused.
You don't mean we should actually try to stop him?
What have you got to lose?
Crowley started to argue and realized that he hadn't anything. There was nothing he could lose that he hadn't lost already. They couldn't do anything worse to him than he had coming to him already. He felt free at last. He also felt under the seat and found a tire iron. It wouldn't be any good, but then nothing would. In fact, it'd be much more terrible facing the adversary with anything like a decent weapon. That way you might have a bit of hope, which would make it worse.
Aziraphale picked up the sword lately dropped by war and hefted its weight thoughtfully.
Gosh, it's been years since I used this, he murmured.
About 6,000, said Crowley.
My word, yes, said the angel. What a day that was, and no mistake. Good old days.
Not really,
said Crowley. The noise was growing.
People knew the difference between right and wrong in those days, said Aziraphale dreamily.
Well, yes. Think about it.
Ah, yes. Too much messing about?
Yes.
Aziraphale held up the sword. There was a phoomp as it suddenly flamed like a bar of magnesium.
Once you learned how to do it, you never forget, he said.
He smiled at Crowley.
I'd just like to say, he said, if we don't get out of this, that I'll have known deep down inside that there was a spark of goodness in you.
That's right,
said Crowley bitterly.
Make my day.
Aziraphale held out his hand.
Nice knowing you, he said.
Crowley took it.
Here's to the next time,
he said.
And Aziraphale?
Yes?
Just remember, I'll have known that, deep down inside, you were just enough of a bastard to be worth liking.
There was a scuffing noise, and they were pushed aside by the small but dynamic shape of Shadwell waving the thundergun purposefully.
I would not trust you to Southern Nancy boys to kill a lame rat in a barrel, he said. Who are we fighting, no?
The devil, said Aziraphale simply.
Shadwell nodded, as if this hadn't come as a surprise, threw the gun down and took off his hat to expose a forehead known and feared wherever street-fighting men were gathered together.
I reckon so, he said. In that case, I'm going to use my hate.
Newt and Anathema watched the three of them walk unsteadily away from the jeep. With Shadwell in the middle, they looked like a stylized W.
What on earth are they going to do? Said Newt.
And what's happening to them?
The coats of Aziraphale and Crowley split along the seams. If you were going to go, you might as well go in your own true shape. Feathers unfolded toward the sky.
Contrary to popular belief, the wings of demons are the same as the wings of angels, although they're often better groomed. Shadwell shouldn't be going with them, said Newt, staggering to his feet.
What's a Shadwell?
He's my son. He's this amazing old man. You'd never believe it. I've got to help him.
Help him? Said Anathema.
I took an oath and everything. Newt hesitated. Well, sort of an oath. And he gave me a month's wages in advance.
Who are those other two, then? Friends of yours?
Anathema began and stopped. Aziraphale had half turned and the profile had finally clicked into place.
I know where I've seen him before,
she shouted, pulling herself upright against Newt as the ground bounced up and down.
Come on!
But something dreadful's going to happen.
If he's damaged the book, you're bloody well right!
Newt fumbled in his lapel and found his official pin. He didn't know what they were going up against this time, but a pin was all he had. They ran. Adam looked around. He looked down. His face took on an expression of calculated innocence. There was a moment of conflict, but Adam was on his own ground. Always and ultimately on his own ground. He moved one hand around in a blurred half circle. Aziraphale and Crowley felt the world change. There was no noise. There were no cracks. There was just that where there had been the beginnings of a volcano of satanic power, there was just clearing smoke and a car drawing slowly to a halt, its engine loud in the evening hush. It was an elderly car, but well-preserved. Not using Crowley's method, though, where dents were simply wished away. This car looked like it did, you knew instantly, because its owner had spent every weekend for 2 decades doing all the things the manual said should be done every weekend. Before every journey, he walked around it and checked the lights and counted the wheels. Serious-minded men who smoked pipes and wore moustaches had written serious instructions saying that this should be done, and so he did, because he was a serious-minded man who smoked a pipe and wore a moustache and did not take such injunctions lightly, because if you did, where would you be? He had exactly the right amount of insurance. He drove 3 miles below the speed limit, or 40 miles per hour, whichever was the lower. He wore a tie, even on Saturdays. Archimedes said that with a long enough lever and a solid enough place to stand, he could move the world. He could have stood on Mr. Young. The car door opened and Mr. Young emerged.
"What's going on here?" he said. "Adam, Adam!"
But the them were streaking toward the gate. Mr. Young looked at the shocked assembly. At least Crowley and Aziraphale had had enough self-control left to winch in their wings.
"What's he been getting up to now?"
he sighed, not really expecting an answer.
"Where's that boy got to? Adam! Come back here this instant!"
Adam seldom did what his father wanted. Right, this was it again. I hope you enjoyed this. Do read the book, people. Just reading it for this again was such a delight. And yes, I love the show as well, obviously, and there's really nothing better than David Tennant, outing myself here. But still, the book has so much more depth, even though a lot of that has been translated into the show. But
But that Armageddon scene, that airfield scene in the book, is just unbeatable. So, well, you've obviously listened to it now, but go read the book. Do it a favour. It's worth it if you haven't done it yet. And otherwise, I'll hear you around on all of the fix in the future. Thank you. Up to another 20,000 listeners. Bye.